and welcome to another episode of When Push Comes to Shove. Today I have a guest. We've got Luca speaking. She's a private midwife, and we're going to have a little chat about Luca, about the birth world and her experience. And anyway, Luca, the floor is yours. So do you want to introduce yourself and what you're all about?
So I'm Luca. I am a midwife, formerly with the NHS. Still doing a little bit of work there, but currently going a bit more private now. I've been with the NHS since I was, 2015. I've worked in birth and breastfeeding and things long before that. And I've also written an academic paper on birth rights as well. So I was excited to discover what was happening and get involved and give my two pennies there.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us.
So I'm not a private midwife in the traditional sense. So obviously a midwife for the NHS is kind of governed and guided by their guidelines. A private midwife is obviously either goes to a different institution or works by themselves. But I've recently gone into antenatal education, which is why I can kind of classify myself as more of a private midwife, because I still obviously serve women, but it's not under the guidance of the NHS per se. So that's how I kind of fall into the private midwife sector now, as opposed to an NHS midwife. But having said that, I still, even though I'm doing antenatal education, I'm still keeping up my skills with the NHS.
You don't do private births?
Not births, no, just antenatal education.
Right, I came with you. So how long have you been qualified?
So I qualified in 2018, mm-hmm. Again, all through the NHS, and currently on maternity leave, and as of the end of my maternity leave, going into, like I say, antenatal education with a colleague and a very dear friend.
Wonderful. And was it your first baby?
It was my first baby, yes. It was very exciting times. Not like I imagined at all. You have these ideas from a clinical point of view, what it's like, you feel like you've seen it all before, but absolutely not. I felt like a beginner all over again, and it definitely informed my practice as well. I thought I was a pretty conscientious midwife, but I have to say that it's definitely broadened my outlook on birth and motherhood and everything. But it was an exciting time for sure.
So in your experience, a lot of people, because I do home births, I do nothing but home births, but a lot of people say to me, what if something goes wrong? And the answer I always give is, well, first you need to understand why things go right in birth to answer that question.
Yeah, that's a nice approach.
Yeah, so what would you say is, what were the most common reasons for things, I don't want to say going wrong, but changing course?
I think that largely it's to do with obviously adhering to guidelines. Unfortunately, that is the biggest factor. Mm-hmm. As an NHS midwife, your hands are somewhat tied to them. I mean, they're guidelines, they're not must do's. You can work outside them, and certainly myself and other close colleagues, we do work outside them, as long as women are safe and they're making an informed choice. We do work outside guidelines, but I think that's the biggest factor, is when things aren't like clockwork and paperwork. But the reality is, that's not what birth is. And I think that's one of the reasons
I've gone into antenatal
education.
In reality, birth isn't what? What do you mean?
In reality, birth doesn't follow a script. It's not, you can have all these guidelines of, if this happens, do this, this happens, do this. And this is the time limit for this. And it's like, it can't really always work that way. And I feel like it sets this precedent for women, and it's quite unfair. And so, I was just saying, that's one of the reasons I went into I'm going into antenatal education is just to let women know like their rights and what they can do and can say, and because I think it's always focused on what you can't do, and and I think that's such a negative way of going into birth from the outlook. So so that's one of the reasons I've kind of changed my course.
I don't blame you, and I'm at the very beginning. Many NHS midwives who want to blow the whistle, but they're so scared to be, you know, all these NMC referrals, and it's a very it's become a very scary place to work. And I had a podcast with some IMUK members last night, and we were discussing about these guidelines and how the NMC is not fit for purpose, and how women are being forced and coerced into a birth that they don't want. If they keep intervening as a standard procedure, of course it's going to go wrong. Syntocin is a synthetic form of oxytocin. It doesn't even reach the brain. And it's much more painful for women. And they're not told this. That's not informed consent. And of course, the like, there's another reason of basic, you know, some people do have medical issues, but that's a very small amount of women. So why is intervention happening to every other woman that walks through the hospital? So why do you think the NHS are not providing us with very basic birth physiology? I mean, that is the start to make informed decisions, right? Why do you think that's not happening?
I think that the difficult thing as well is obviously during this pandemic, they're having, even though like NHS antenatal courses provide the bare minimum education that they should be given, even, you know, during this pandemic, they've not been given anything. And that's so scary. And unfortunately, I haven't work during any of it because as I say, I'm on maternity leave, but that can only have compromised a lot of women's birth and a lot of women's experiences. But just going back to your original question, it's one of the first reasons I actually came into midwifery in the first place, is that everything was becoming medicalized, and it all come from, I hope you don't mind me digressing a little bit, is my mum is a very naturalistic person, as was my nan, and they were into things like homeopathy and hypnotherapy and acupressure and things like that. So my nan and my mum, but all, you know, all of their births were nothing. I think one occasion they might have had a bit of gas and air during like stitching or something like this. And then my sister had a horrific time. And then friends had a horrific time, and I thought, hang on, how can, but my mum and my nan are obviously headstrong and very knowledgeable about these things. So, you know, they were quite happy about speaking up and going, absolutely not. What is that? What are you doing? And they were quite happy asking questions. But, you know, the other experiences of women in my life weren't quite the same. And I was looking into it and thinking, how come it is more medicalized? And I looked at obviously places like the US, where it's notorious for just being complete, you know, obstetrician-led births, that's the norm, and midwifery-led births are quite a rarity over there. And that's the main reason I went into midwifery in the first place, is to just kind of challenge it from the get-go. And I must admit, even as a student, I was challenging a lot of things, and I was met with resistance from the very, very beginning. And it was just even just things like, it was like my first week or something, and I was with a midwife, and she was like, okay, so there's the woman coming in, so what do we need to do? We need to get her a gown, we need to get her a cannula. And I was like, don't you think she'll be more comfortable in her nightgown? And again, I was just met with resistance, and just thinking, they were like, no, that's our guideline, you know, get them a gown, get all the stuff for a cannula and get them started. And I remember thinking, wow, I feel like a lot of pressure to be quiet. And I've come into this profession with like this kind of headstrong attitude, as in like, no, I'm gonna make a change here, because this is a bit scary. Like, I don't want to become, you know, anything like America or other places.
An obstetric nurse, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to become that at all. And that was the first time I challenged something, and I said, oh, what do you think that she might be more comfortable comfortable in her own clothes or her own nightgown. Like, why do we have to give her our clothing? I thought that was very strange. And like I say, the way that my query was dealt with was very much like, shh, you know, stop talking, like, do it the way we need to do it. And I think as I went through my training, I never stopped being, I was never quiet, I was always doing something. And I got the reputation of, oh, send Luca in there, she always gets a normal birth. And I remember feeling like really proud of it. And in the end, it made me feel really sad, because I was just thinking, if I can achieve a normal birth, I haven't got any magical powers. All I do is think, put myself in that position and advocate the woman and make sure the environment is good and make sure the woman feels empowered and make sure that, you know, the birth partner is involved and making sure, you know, her wishes, her requests are adhered to. And I just think I'm just doing what a midwife's job is. So like I said, I got this lovely reputation of, oh, send Luca in there, she'll have a nice normal delivery. And it's just, and I, like I say, I remember feeling like really proud of myself for that reputation, because that's ideally what I wanted to achieve. But in the end, it's like, why am I singled out as being the only one that's actually doing something? Why is this not the
normal? And also, you know, women hand over their births. They really, if women took control and realised they had the power, stop handing your births to people. You know, you can do this. You can take the power and do this yourself. And it's just so, it's a scary time. And like, why do you think births moved into hospital when it's not a medical procedure? What's going on there? Why is it more standard to give birth at home unless you're ill?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's ironically, that's what I wanted. And I felt like, say, even though in the position I'm in and how headstrong I am, I still fell victim to, you're not allowed, oh, okay. I fell victim to that.
What did they tell you weren't allowed to do?
And like, on reflection, I was just thinking, hang on, this is what I stand for. And even I fell victim to that. But there were a lot of things involved, and I wanted to go with the hospital where I was working, because I was adamant that I would have the best possible care, especially if it's people who I know and I trust and I love. And but the home birth team that was closest to me was with a hospital, and I didn't know anyone, and I kind of weighed it up myself, to be honest, as to what type of delivery I wanted. And I felt like overall I'd be more relaxed and more calm, and ultimately would be achieving the birth that I would like, having gone to that hospital. But obviously they didn't extend like their home birth team as far as me, because I'm like 40, 45 minutes away. So in the end, I was thinking, actually, no, the birth I want is to be surrounded by people who I trust and who I love. And that's why my birth experience was positive. But yeah, initially I was with the home birth team attached to my area. And there was a lot of, oh, you can do this and you can't do this. And I was just, I never divulged the fact that I was a midwife. And I feel like that changes so much, like your care changes so much.
Why are midwives not?
I know, because I challenged this during my training. And I very quickly went into supporting the university as well, and the new midwives coming through after me to help them gain their skills as well. So, you know, like on skills days and things, I very quickly become involved in that, because I challenged that as well. Like, why aren't midwives more competent in it? And the reality is, as you say, as soon as anyone's breached, they don't come via the midwife. They go through from an ultrasound to an obstetrician, and then their plan is made. So I was never in the pathway involved in terms of saying, well, hang on,
you know, that's the problem. But then you guys get to experience it, do you?
Exactly. And I remember one time I was working in a birth in like an independent standalone birth center. And this woman come in, and it was her second baby, which are notoriously a lot quicker and, you know, relatively straightforward. I don't mean to stereotype, but they, in my experience, they are as well. And anyway, I had examined her with her permission, and I found her to be the baby to be breached. Now, at the time, I was a student, and the midwife called an ambulance, and that is our protocol, because obviously, you know, yes, there's more than one way of delivering. It doesn't have to be a cesarean, it can be vaginally, but I know as a midwife I'd feel happier if at the drop of a hat there is obstetricians around, because there's a lot of things that you can do. There's a huge algorithm that you can do to safely and effectively deliver a breech baby, but there's other maneuvers that obstetricians are legally allowed to do that we aren't allowed to do. So I know certainly I would have liked them in the background, but not in the foreground. But I was thinking, why are we ringing an ambulance? It's not a medical emergency. Like, we can transfer if that's the case. But I remember thinking, this is so odd. And like, that was my whole experience as a student. I was very much like, why is that? And like, being completely flabbergasted by so many very normal practices. Anyway, so we got into the nearby hospital, and at this stage there was just myself, the midwife who I was working with, and the woman in the room. And we'd said, you know, it's entirely your decision, and we gave her all of the facts, and she said, no, I'd like to go for vaginal birth. And I was like, good for you.
Awesome.
So the midwife who I was speaking to, she went outside and let the wider team know, but also let them know, you know, there's no need for you to come in at this stage. So it was all set up and it was beautiful, and I put the fairy lights back on and put the music back on and dimmed all the lights and made sure, you know, got the oxytocin flowing and things like this. And she hadn't even been pushing for 5 minutes, and the team just came in like completely unannounced. And I like tried my hardest just not to cry out of frustration, as in like, what do you think you're doing to her oxytocin? Like, that is not good. And I feel like, yeah, again, a lot of my experiences were like that. My hard work is always tends to be eclipsed by the obstetricians. And
yep, I know it.
Yeah. And so
I couldn't deal with it. So I take my hat off to you. I couldn't deal with it. I'd get sacked. I know I would. So
yeah.
I went into being a doula, but
yeah,
you're very brave.
And a lot of people, you know, I'm notorious for like being a naturalistic, like I'm labelled this naturalistic midwife, but the reality is I'm just
midwife should be.
I'm just being a midwife. I don't, like I said to my reputation as well, like I don't consider myself to be anything special. Like, I feel like I'm just doing a good job at doing my job.
Well, it sounds like you are something special, because although all midwives should be that way, they're clearly not for you to get that title.
And but the thing is, it's scary. It's a scary thing to do. And I'm ordinarily, I'm a pretty passive person, and I let a lot of things go. But when my job's concerned and where these women are concerned, I can get so feisty and so fiery. And honestly, like, I shock myself sometimes when I challenge people, but I just think it's this such a monumental day and experience in someone's life. And obviously I've come to realise even more so, having experienced it myself. But you know, I'd get, people would laugh at me when, you know, there's certain procedures, you know, if you're inducing someone and you can break their waters and you give them a minute or give them so much to this set hour, and then you come back and, oh, it's just all this. But I used to use those opportunities as in like, for the women, as in like, just forget everything. Like, we are just going to focus on your oxytocin. And people used to roll their eyes when they're like, right, you know, 2 hours, we're going to reassess. It's like, well, in 2 hours, we'll ask the women if they would like to be reassessed, of course. And I've always got this lovely little smile on my face, and so I never really offend anyone, but I'm always met with resistance. And during those 2 hours, my God, you should see me. It's like a comedy sketch show, because I'm just like, lights down low, get the fairy lights on, get the little tea lights on. Do you want a bath? I'll get you a bath. And it's just like, ring your mum, have a little cuddle. I'm going to leave you to it. And one time as well, you know, I was setting them all up and they were so relaxed. It was so lovely. And hadn't quite got going yet, but it's so unfair because the time limit is just stupidly small. And this is my frustration every time. And I know I'm smiling, but I feel like that's just my natural response to being
frustrated,
but I'll still keep this smile on my face. And yeah, I remember this one time I was like, I think I was told to go on my lunch or something, and I got this plan in my head, and I was like, right, if this doesn't work, I'll get this out, or I'll get a bit of aromatherapy out, or I'll get this out. And they were like, right, Luca, go on your break. And it was like, oh no, I was like, we got like 40 minutes before. Oh. And so I said to this midwife who was taking over for me, I was like, right, can you go in there and can you talk her through a bit of nipple stimulation? And she looked at me mortified, and I was like, please. I was like, honestly, that's the last little thing I've left to kind of talk her through. And like, and she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, yeah, but it's a 2-hour window. And this is just my life, honestly, just always like eye rolling, met with resistance. But I know that I can go home at the end of the day and know that I've done absolutely everything possible that I could have and can do for these women. But
Why don't you become an independent midwife? We need people like you.
Yeah, I mean, like I've not been doing it an awful long time, but it was enough for me to realise that, yeah, I need to start at the beginning. And I feel like that is one of the reasons, again, I'm going into education, is because I want to set these women up in the best possible light and just kind of just start from the beginning. I feel like that's where I need to be at the moment, is literally from conception right up into, you know, guiding them.
When push comes to shove, our next goal, we are setting up a charity to educate children in birth, because you don't want to get to an age where you're pregnant and then you're like, oh, I've only got several months to learn everything. Then you're cornered, usually scaremongered into a procedure you don't want, and more to the point that you don't realise that you don't need to have. So we're going to go into schools, age 11, 12. Because boys need to know as well, because they're becoming these obstetricians, and they're also becoming these mothers, which are going, oh, no, you can't have a home birth, that's not safe, without knowing anything about birth. And making the judgment call to tell their wife or their girlfriend, who's the one experiencing it, no, you can't have a home birth. No.
I'm loving this conversation. This is so easy. It's so nice. Like I say, I've just always met with like eye rolls or resistance, even as the midwife.
Not here, Luca. Not here.
Women, but now it's like, oh, it's so juicy.
We're going to make a change, because do you know what? I mean, as you pointed out, when you gave the example about the vaginal breach, midwives don't really get a say in vaginal breaches, because before they've even got to see the person, it's gone from scan to obstetrics. This is where we have to make a difference. As if you just have a fleeting glance in the history of revolution, change, you know, when there's been an uprising, it's never come from within the system. The governments don't go, oh, we're fucking up, let's change this. It's the people. So that is my approach. So this is why I think when push comes to shove is different. It's going to be a change from the women, not from the system. They're not going to work. They're going to go, oh no, guidelines. And then just keep repeating the word guidelines like it actually means something.
I think that's why it's so poignant as well that you mentioned about, you know, even bringing it into education as early as school age, because you're absolutely right. It needs to... I think, again, that's my outlook, is I felt like I needed to start from the beginning, but you're absolutely right, it kind of needs to start way beyond.
Because then by the time they get pregnant, they'll understand that they actually do have a choice.
My colleague who I'm starting my new venture with as well, she was very much big on kind of getting as much information as she possibly can into like the community part of her care. She was a community midwife, and I got a lot of my a lot of my advice came from a lot of her advice. And I remember whenever I was a student, forgive me for going back to like my student days, because I feel like they're just as poignant as they are as like my current practices. It honestly, I've experienced quite a lot in such a small amount of time. But yeah, when I worked alongside her, and she used to do like offer stretch and sweeps to women, and she used to always say, right, now go home, have a good cuddle, have a good cry, have a hold hands, have like take your clothes off, have a cuddle. And I used to think, I love how she's presented that. She's not done it as in like do this and this, you know, this has to happen. And equally, she didn't scoot over the fact that that needed to happen. She went straight for, I love her. She knows how much I love her anyway, but she just the way she was with the women is incredible. She's like, take your clothes off, have a good cuddle, have a little cry, put something on that's going to make you cry happy tears. She was going, none of that, like, don't put Marley and Me on or anything. I thought she's brilliant. And and like straight from the get-go, I remember like that was really early on, and she was my mentor when I was a student, and now we're really good friends, and now we're going into
that's doing awesome. This well, I get involved when push comes to shove, because the next stage is going to be education. So whatever you can do to get involved and spread the word, you know, get on board with us, because that's what our aim is too. I mean, pregnant women are already scared, and then they have this information thrown at them. I mean, I a friend of mine years ago, she had gestational diabetes, and first of all, I was like, oh, you agreed to the test. Like, you know, you don't have to agree to the test. I probably had it. But I think she was so overwhelmed being pregnant. She had to be in control of what was happening to her. So any suggestions outside of the norm, she just completely, you know, and she was like, I don't want to know. So that's too late, right? So before women get pregnant, they need to understand. And it's not about... No, it's down to no one else but the person that is carrying a baby about how they give birth. Everyone knows I'm a home birther. I love home births. I advocate free birth if they're informed, not because they've been coerced by an NHS that will not support them. So their choice is either COVID-ridden hospital or free birth. That's never the recipe. But women who are informed and they understand their body, go for it. But that's my opinion. But no one is here to say to women, free birth, no one should do that. They should be giving birth in the way they want. If they want to go and, you know, book a hotel in Disneyland with all the Disney characters singing to them while they give birth, they should do that. Or by a lake, or with a dolphin. Or if they want a planned cesarean section with all the information in front of them and they still want to have a C-section, do it. But don't give your birth to anyone. Take it. So we're just about empowerment. That's what we want to do.
Absolutely.
But anyway, we've run out of time now, Luca. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'd love you to come back in a few months and see where you're getting on.
Absolutely. I feel like I've just meandered the whole time, so hopefully I've made some sort of sense, or some sort of impact would have been nice. But
I'd love to hear your story, your truth. And I'm going to have a look at your paper. That sounds amazing.
Please do. I'm just touching on that really briefly. Like, it was a global study, and I feel like it, before you read it as well, I think you'd be right to kind of assume, oh, it's touching on what you said right at the beginning about, you know, things like poverty and resources and things like that leading to a negative birth, and I assume the same thing. But what was scary to realize is it's not just those specific places. It's the UK was as bad, if not worse, than nearly every other country that I explored when I did this piece of paper. So
it was surprised. I'm not surprised, because the general process within hospital is intervention. So of course things are going to go wrong. Yeah. And there's no informed consent.
Yeah, I had an exciting time writing it. So hopefully you enjoy reading it as well.
Oh, but, sure.
I'm very proud of that. It's a lot of time and a lot of effort, but definite labour of love. That was, yeah. But thank you for your time. I appreciate it.